You are listening to another weekly episode of the Pranks and Firth Show live from Southend / Norfolk. Norfolk?
Yeah.
Norwich. Norfolk? Norwich. Where are you?
I'm back home for the day.
I am Ash Frith. That's Justin Panks. Right. This is Pranks and Firth.
In the world.
In the world. I've been adding the theme tune back in again recently.
Oh, cool. I've got to work on that new one that was new a year and a half ago and I never got around to recording.
Yeah, it hasn't been your priority.
No, it hasn't.
To be fair to you.
Mm-hmm.
And can you play it for us live now?
See what?
Can you play us the... What?
Yeah, I'm grabbing my guitar. Can you hear this?
Always got it with you. I knew you'd have it with you.
I'm not singing.
Beautiful. Am I just going to put that on a loop and I'll put that through the entire part? I'm not.
Okay, no, that's the background. So the new one goes like this. Rocky, man. It's like Led Zeppelin or some shit.
Well, when will we hear it? And do you remember that it's mainly calling me a piggy fat, pig-faced boy?
Yep, and your big old head.
Look forward to it.
I've got a massive head. It's very rare that I meet someone with a larger head. I've got to maximise that.
Fair enough, mate.
I mean, I was at a party at Christmas and I didn't know anyone there. And there was this guy coming and his nickname was Head. And I go, what do you call him Head? They go, he's got a massive head. And I was looking at him and I was pissed as fuck. And I went, didn't know anyone there. I went, I think my head's bigger than this. I think I can take him. They got a tape measure out, measured our heads, and mine was bigger.
This is the worst thing I've ever
heard. Why?
You get tape measures out. Well, A, you went to a party, you didn't know anyone there.
Only one person there, obviously, but they were all of their friends and none of mine. Have you ever gone to a party as a plus one and you don't know anyone there and then you think, I'll tell you what, I think I'm going to take this man on for the size of my head? You've never done that?
No, I haven't. I think I've only ever been to three parties.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun.
I went to a party once and someone pulled the sofa out, puked on the floor and then put the sofa back over the top of it.
Mate, that's awesome. That's good. That's a good party guest.
That was an 18th or 21st.
Oh, never sick from drink.
Really?
No, I think my body's just like this. Well, we are not ever expelling this beautiful elixir from my system.
Never sober enough to actually...
Oh, come on, man. Come on, man.
Stop puking. So I just saw a thing on Twitter before we started recording, and it is a guy who bungee jumps by holding on to the bungee.
Right.
And as it reaches the, I'm going to say, what would you say, like the apex, full extension?
Yeah, the lowest point.
He then just lets go and drops onto a mat.
Well, that's like in like... Warner Brothers cartoons and that, where they'd be in a Wile E. Coyote would be stood on a shed and it or something, and it would fall off a cliff. And just before the thing he was standing on hit the floor, he'd step off it and survive. And I used to think, yeah, that made sense to me that would work.
That works.
Yeah, I didn't understand physics back then.
No.
But yeah, so I guess, yeah, I suppose there is a point where the bungee, just before it starts to elasticate back up, there must be a point of inertia, right, where you're sort of stationary.
There's a point where it reaches zero, yes.
That's but exactly you've got to get your measurements right, haven't you?
Otherwise, you'll get catapulted off forever into nothingness.
What's worse? The rope being too short, so you let go when you've got 20 foot left to the ground, or it's just been too long. That's worse, isn't it? And you just splat.
Yeah, because that is definitely death.
That's definitely dead. And I suppose if it's too short, you have the option to not let go of it as well.
Yeah, Well, yeah.
Or
but
try
then
not
you've got to try
it.
And hold on as you go back up.
Yeah, you just got to hold on until it stops. I don't like the sound of that. My palms are sweating just listening to that. That sounds too risky.
Hello, listener. Ash here. We did the introduction. Then we realised there was a problem with the recording, but we were already quite far into a story of Justin going to the dentist. So I'm going to fade you in now so you can just hear Justin talking about his lovely time at the dentist, and then the rest of the podcast will go on and it'll be lovely. Thanks for listening, and you're all good people. Cheers.
and done it. He goes, what? I go, that really hurt. He goes, oh, with the drilling. I went, that honestly, that really 10 out of 10 hurt. He goes, okay, we'll give you another cartridge, which I guess means another cartridge of serum. So they gave me another injection on the outside and he sat me back up. And then my whole fucking head was so numb. And he was drilling. He goes, how's that? I went, I've got a real thing.
So he drilled. So why don't they just do that right from the start? That's what I don't understand. Well, why do you have to get to the point where you go, that hurts too much?
Do you know what I was equating it to? What we talked about the other week, side lights on a car. Why put your side lights on when there's no extra effort to put your full lights on?
Yeah.
Why semi-numb me? Just, do you know what? They're on the side of caution,
knock
mate.
Me out.
He's trying to save the price of another cartridge of... whatever it is. I don't think it's Novocaine anymore, do they? I don't know. But whatever it was, he's obviously trying to get away with a bare minimum.
I think, put a gas mask on me, knock me unconscious with gas, do whatever the fuck you want with me.
Wank me off.
Do whatever.
No?
I don't care.
So he starts drilling into it, and then they just had these sort of like plastic, they look like gum shields, and they fill it up with a silicon. And he's taking all moulds of my teeth. And then he goes, I'm going to put a little bit of a temporary filling in. He goes, your crown will be ready in 2 weeks. And I was like, fuck's sake.
2 weeks?
Yeah. So he goes, be a little bit careful chewing on that side tonight and hot drinks and that. And I thought he meant it might came out. So anyway,
straight in with a hot drink, cup of coffee.
No, I didn't. I thought, you know what? I'm not going to risk it. I'm not going to eat on that side. I'm not going to have any hot. It was like, I don't know, it was 7 o'clock at night. I'm not going to have any hot drinks then. I'm not the best sleeper anyway. If I have caffeine or wash, I'm very sensitive to the caffeine.
Are you?
I'm just not a very good sleeper. So I just think, what's the point in having a stimuli? What's the point of indulging in stimuli close to bed? So anyway, it started wearing off. And even if I just sort of like close my lips and sort of suck and create a vacuum in my mouth, fucking, oh, it's agony. And I'm touching my tongue and it's agony. And I'm thinking, oh, is it a nerve? I've got to ring them up in the morning. This ain't no good. But this morning it has dulled to the point where it's fine, although I definitely can't eat on it yet, but I'm hoping it will dull more.
Do
but
you obviously think disturbed that it's dulled, or do you think you've hardened to the pain?
I think you can get used to pain, can't you? But I don't think I could have got used to that much pain that quickly. I mean, last night I was really worried.
You've had a really good like 12 months, haven't you?
Oh, no. Which is what my material's about.
I'm gonna oh, is it? Tonight. You're going to mine oh, the...
Yeah, you got it, haven't you?
What?
It's the way I deal with it, Ash, is how I deal with it.
Is it? You've never done it before.
I cope with the darkness by looking at it through a prism of fun.
Is that how you actually cope with it?
No, I just drink it away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how I cope
don't
with
talk.
It. Yeah. It's like, I said in my mind there's a set of scales, and on one scale is this anxiety-addled brain full of pain and remorse and regrets and fear.
And
then the other one is just a black. And then the other side of the sky is just a black liver. And I'm like, I will accept that. That is the trade. That's the deal I've made with the devil, and I'm sticking to it. I'm not reneging on that deal.
No. And also, you could probably get a liver transplant by the time.
To be honest, if I'm 44 now, I'm 45 soon. Couple of months, really.
What are you doing for your birthday? What are you doing on your actual birthday?
Gigging.
I know. I've
got a gig. I know. It falls on a Saturday or Friday, I can't remember. But I am going to... So if I make 55 and they go, you need a liver transplant, I say, just don't bother, mate.
Oh,
I'll be down spoons.
It's so annoying when people do that.
What's that?
When they say, you know what, don't worry about it. No, I don't want
I will that. Say that because I'm just going to just... I don't want... Like, livers, like, you know, transplants and stuff... Give it to someone who's going to look after it. I'll just fuck that one up as well, mate. I'm not going to lie.
Well, you can't do that. We've got to get more than 10 years out of this podcast. So the Patreon will have only just been switched on by then.
Yeah, maybe I'll actually see some money.
What about
by
me?
No, that's the thing. Every time I do it, like all this, everything has happened over the last 12 months. First thing I think, oh, what about Ash?
Yeah, exactly.
I know. So anyway, I've been writing and it feels good and it feels good to be writing.
It is nice. Let's see if it gets laughs. That's when it really works.
I know that there are parts of the... I just know there are lines that will get laughs.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the night is, a free entry, proper open mic night.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I could go there and do my set and not get laughs, possibly.
Is it in the town centre, the one that I've done recently?
Your favourite drink?
Oh, is it a BrewDog?
Yeah, it's a BrewDog.
Oh, no, I've not done that one.
And it's a city, not a town.
I've heard about it. The little village.
Yeah. It's not a little village. It's
yeah, I know that Ross McGrain...
Two cathedrals.
Ross McGrain did it there. And before he went on, I think he was closing the show. Because they pay someone to close, don't they?
Yeah, I closed the first ever one. That's why it went on to become a regular success, because the first one ended on such a high note.
There was a guy talking about dying and the endless black of death, and with no jokes, just talking for 5 minutes.
Oh, was he one of those really inventive anti-comedians? Because I love them. They're really clever, aren't they, that they can go up and not be funny? And because like not being funny is really difficult and brave.
Yeah, I don't think...
As opposed to being funny, which is easy and anyone can do.
Don't think the audience liked it.
I don't like it. I saw the worst ever one at a festival... And I'd never seen him before or since. He's from the Midlands, and he did the anti-comedy stuff in a festival tent, and everyone walked out. And it was it wasn't only anti-comedy; it was a bad example of that anti-comedy.
Yeah.
But, and I just thought, they think they're so fucking, you know, like avant-garde, and yeah, I'm going to get up there and say this really long, boring thing in a monotone voice because I'm edgy. And it's like, it's just. Why are you doing this to people?
But I've seen people do it and be hilarious, though.
For how long?
It can be done. Like 10 or 20 minutes.
Not 20 minutes. I don't buy 20 minutes.
Well, so people like Brian Gittins, I've seen him and found him hilarious. And would you say that was...
a character, though, isn't it? It's slightly different.
Okay.
I mean, in a way, Tommy Cooper was a deliberately bad conjurer, magician, but funny bones... So I guess like there is a kind of thing of someone being bad, but like when they get up there and actually it's like a blinking competition with the staring competition, I suppose I should say, with the audience, where it's like I'm just not going to see who can blink the most. To see, it's just like this, like I'm going to just front it out, and I think it can work for 5 minutes, and then I think people are like, okay, where are the jokes?
Yeah.
Another anti joke.
Yeah. Again. It's so, there is only 2% of people that can make it work. I would agree with that, but I have seen it work.
I don't know what you've seen. I don't know what you've seen. You don't know what I've seen.
But then I've also seen the same person. I'm thinking of one particular person.
Older guy?
Yeah.
Moustache?
Oh, no.
Oh.
I'm thinking of, what's his name? Axel.
Oh, Ed Axel. Ed Axel. Yeah, all right. Well, look, it's a one joke act, isn't it? The joke is it's not funny. We're all sort of in on it. I'm boring. I shouldn't be, you know. I'm on stage entertaining people, and the irony of me standing up here and talking about various cat flaps and but 20 minutes, I can't see it working for 20 minutes.
No,
I think everyone, like, on a bill, on a mixed bill, when the first act's all high energy and trying to be likable. Then the middle act comes on. It's really funny. It's a change of pace. It's completely not what you expect. Then the novelty wears off, and then people get the hump. That's what I've always seen. It's when your whole persona and demeanor and MO is to be the opposite of funny. I just think it's just boring. And anything they think it's the least original act there is, because it is just such a one dimensional thing, and it's been done and done and done and done. And people that go up there and do it now, it's. Oh, I'm really confounding expectations. It's like, no, 30 seconds into your set, I know exactly what to expect, and it's shit. Fuck off.
But have you had it where you're on stage, and if you're MCing maybe, and you don't realize you're not sure where you're going, and I've definitely had it where I'm not doing material, and I thought, oh, I've got no end to this. I don't know that this is going to be funny as I get out the other end. There's also the thing, as much as there may be a place for it, there might be gigs for it, I don't know. Like, I think the bizarre thought that you can go into a comedy club and just do it anywhere, I think that baffles me. Like, cause there are certain clubs that work in certain ways. Like, you know, this open mic one tonight, you could probably go and do anything for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and some people will die, some people won't die.
I think this type of thing is born from open mic circuit where you're performing to a room full of other comics. So the fact you're doing something different to what they're trying to do somehow works. But when you're in front of paying punters, and I don't want to sound like a mainstream ITV sort of, but like when they've got babysitters and got a taxi into the city and they're sitting there watching you, they don't want to hear you just being self-indulgent and playing with the form. They want to be entertained. And like, okay, there was a club where it was all that shit called the Invisible Dot, and that's gone. Because it's a cliquey in crowd self indulgent sort of thing, I think. And the thing is, I sound like, if any of like that faction be listening to this, going, oh, listen to his slaggers off. But I know that those people are the worst for slagging off club comics.
Yeah. Well, club comic isn't a dirty word, but
to them it is. To them it absolutely is.
I was
going
to say, to them it can be.
I remember I heard a brilliant rant Bill Burr did. I can't remember what it was on. It was either an interview or it might have been on his podcast. And he was saying about these alternative comics that only can play their own rooms. And he'd say he'll be doing like a charity gig or some sort of benefit and there'll be one of them on. And he was saying, oh, they always turn up. They always look the same with their little bag. And he goes, they always want to go on first and leave early. He goes, and they stink the place out. And he goes, and who comes on to mop up the pieces? The club comic. Exactly the comedians that they think are just hacks and unoriginal and shit. But they're the ones that can actually get up there and fucking put the room back together after they've shit the bed with their self-indulgent musings.
But we've spoken before about acts where we are looking at them and thinking, you know, old hacks and doing old jokes and other people's stuff. And we've also spoken about the fact that they can go on and smash a gig, even though we're looking at them going, well, this is shit. They're just using other people's lines.
Look, as I've sort of like got older, and not just older as a man, but older as a comic, like I've been going over a decade now. So it's not just age thing, it's an experience thing. I've kind of learned to have a smidgen of respect for even the biggest of hack, because to go in a room full of people where no one knows you, make them laugh, isn't easy. And you could pluck someone off the street and say, you can use any material you like, and they still, not everyone could do it. And yeah, there's levels to everything, isn't there? I always said, I did a charity once and there was a magician on the bill. And I am known for being a bit, what would you say?
Not abrasive? Really, not.
No, but I'm sort of like quite misanthropic.
Oh, yeah. A bit cunty.
Well, I'd sort of try and keep a lid on it, but yeah, that is my natural propensity. And I remember I said to another, there was an old adage I heard once. It was like, if you want to know how much, because Australians and English people can have a little bit of banter and feel very different. But I heard someone say, if you want to know how much you've got, English have got in common with Australian people, is put them in the room of an American. So I kind of like hijacked that and I said to another act. So I'm normally like, oh, I hate acts. Comedians piss me off the way they talk in the green room. I just walk out normally. But I said to this other act, if you want to know how much...
You make a lot of friends, don't you, in the pre-gig?
No, I don't need it. I'm all good for friends, mate. I've got two. That'll do. I said, that's too much admin for me sometimes. And I said to this other comedian, this magician was talking, he was on stage, and I said, fuck me. I said, I think I hate comedians, but if you want to know how much I've got in common with other comedians, put me in the room of a magician. And what? Even the hackiest comedian I prefer to an actor or a magician.
What did the other act say, out of curiosity?
They just looked at me like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it, with your attitude. Because that's probably the first and only thing you said to that person the entire time you were there.
Yeah, I've had that. I've had that where I've sat quietly and then someone's been on stage and I've looked at them, rolled my eyes and gone, what the fucking hell was that? And they've like looked at me like upset. And then the acts come off stage and they've given each other a big hug and like, I'll see you again next Tuesday. And are you coming around for that barbecue? And I'm like, oh God, they're mates.
Yeah, but we're mates, Justin. What about if someone was being mean about me backstage? You'd stand up. You'd say, don't you dare say that about my friend.
I actually don't know what I'd do. That's an interesting question.
I do. You'd laugh, but when you come off, you go, he said you were shit.
I would say that. I would tell you. I wouldn't like side with them and be like some supercilious, you know, duplicitous.
What about if
man.
I was doing badly?
Well, that's a given. But I'd try to just say, look, he's got a baby. He's just getting out of the house. Just leave him to it. I insulted one act for what he was wearing. He had like shorts on.
That's unacceptable. I've said this before.
He had like big woolly socks and a pair of hiking boots and like the most unironed shirt. And the MC, I looked at the MC, Susie walked in, I said, what the fuck is he dressed like that for? And he went, what's wrong with that? And I went, oh, yeah, nothing. But obviously there's something wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, I once had a word with our good friend James Beattie, who runs gigs and occasionally performs. He turned up to a gig in shorts. And I don't, like, I'm not up for any kind of dress code. I don't think you should have a dress code. But something about going on stage in shorts is open mic. I'm at the pub anyway. I think I'm going to go and try
a fight. The thing with shorts specifically is then you've been out in the day, haven't you, wearing shorts. And you haven't, and you just rocked up at a gig, which is in the evening.
Yeah.
And you're wearing shorts.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly it. It's, oh, I'll give this a go.
Yeah, I'm at my brother-in-law's barbecue. I've had a few drinks, plucked up the courage. I'm going to go get on stage. That's what it looks like.
I don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear about it. And if I'm going to slag someone off for wearing shorts, you better fucking side with me, even if it's your brother.
What about flip-flops?
Okay. Well, no, not in any... even wear them at the gym.
What about Crocs?
When I'm walking around in the sauna. No, mate, no Crocs.
My girlfriend hates Crocs. I've got no... I mean, I don't have any Crocs, but I don't think I'd hate them any more than a flip-flop.
The thing about Crocs is I am tapping out of any aesthetic...
Yeah.
I mean, it's like there's form versus... There's fashion versus function, I guess, and you think, oh, I really like these, but they're uncomfortable. But Crocs is just comfort. They're made out of... Well, they're made out of rubber.
Foam, yeah, just foam.
They've never even touched a pair. They're baggy, they're lightweight, they're just...
I could see you with a pair of Crocs, actually.
No, you can't.
I can imagine it.
Well,
Crocs and socks, I can imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. And then they've got that little heel strap. They're just... No, you look like a dentist. That's what they wear, isn't it?
What, dentists wear Crocs?
They wear clogs, don't they? Oh, well, which I don't
understand. Well, wooden clogs?
No, they wear like little medical clogs. You know what I mean. People listening know what I mean about the dentist clog. They've got their own little clog thing going on. Which is weird because it's like, it always strikes me that when you go to a dentist and they're wearing that sort of blue tabard thing and the blue trousers and the... It's like they think they're like performing open heart surgery. It's like you're drilling into someone's fucking tooth and sticking a bit of metal in there.
Yeah, get with it.
Relax. Like asking the dental nurse to mop their brow.
Why do they... Do you not think dentistry is as important as surgery?
Yeah, I do think that. Don't you?
I think they're doctors, aren't they?
I'm not saying they're not doctors, but they like... The GP, when you go to the GP, that's a doctor, but he doesn't dress up like
Dr. What are you Kildare saying? Who's performing more important, a GP or a dentist?
A GP. A GP can save your life.
Can a dentist not save your life?
I don't know how many people die of tooth-related things. Like maybe you can get a diseased abscess and swallow so much pus.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's rare, though, isn't it? I mean, you go to I suppose they can find a lump in your mouth.
What did he say? Have you shown your dentist your little dangler?
Yeah, I had to. I had to say, I said to the nurse, I said, can you be good with that little Hoover thing? Because I will choke otherwise. I cannot feel saliva building up at the back of my throat.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it?
So then he goes, he goes, I'll tell you what, we could probably do a bit of drilling without the water. Because they spray water in. And he did a little bit. And I could just smell the burning of the bone. It was horrible.
Oh,
you know like when you're drilling through like a skirting board and your drill's a bit blunt and you get that smell of burning wood?
It stinks.
Oh, my God. And I was just like... And it's just like they've got a little set of power tools. He's got his Dremel out. And I just felt like... I felt like a toy being repaired. Do you know what I mean? It feels very... It was very sort of inhuman when someone's drilling into your mouth and you can smell it burning like a substance.
So something interesting happened to me, after talking with you about when you were on stage and a woman was like, boring, move on. I did a gig where I was about to bring on the middle act and someone just shouted out, boring.
I've been thinking long and hard about this phenomenon and there is only one explanation.
Go on.
You are talking to members of the audience, asking them their name, what they do, coming up with some witty retorts and banter. And in the room, in our midst, there is a narcissist in the room that thinks, why isn't he talking to me?
Yeah, I didn't then speak to this lady.
Well, I did to the one that did that to me, and she was smiling and well into it and laughing.
Yeah.
But it's a way of saying, talk to me, without actually saying, talk to me, in which case you would out yourself as a narcissist. But you can come across as, like, discerning, feisty, forthright, and brazen, and get spoken to. And these people need to be shot in the back of the head and buried in a mass grave.
Well, this person, I pretended to be upset with her saying I was boring. Everyone else is having a lovely time. So I was like, oh no, I can't believe I've upset this one person. All these other people are having a great time. But what really sort of sticks with me is this one person said I was boring. And then I tried to be the most boring I could be for about 2 or 3 minutes. Just
anti-comedy. You knew your new 4-0.
That's why I was supporting it. I just said, like, oh, what's your favourite number? What's your favourite colour? And I was like, is this what you want? Are you happier now? And then she left. She's got up.
Left?
Yeah, got up and left.
Oh. I managed to hang on to my dissenter by turning the audience against her.
Well, I thought you'd be impressed. I think if you force someone to leave by calling them out for being a dick, I thought Justin will like this.
Yeah, I am. I didn't say I didn't.
Yeah, I was pleased.
The only trouble with that is you're sometimes the promoter. It's a fine line, like, right, morally, artistically, right thing to do. But if it affects the bottom line, I just worry that the promoter's going to be like, oh, you can't, like, walk people.
Well, only because I didn't, like, what? I'm just doing my job as an MC.
That's what I mean. But what is your job? Right, to us and to the audience and to most people, our job is to be as funny and deal with things in the most inventive and creative way we can. But to the venue, your job, we are basically maggots on hooks to get them in to buy drinks.
Yeah.
It's a business.
Yeah, you do. Well, so, some aren't, but those gigs are the ones that normally fade away pretty quick.
They are, but I'm just saying it is a bit of a grey area. Like, there are promoters that will always back the acts who are comedy fans, and there are the promoter might, like the gig I was at, the promoter probably would applaud that, but the venue that the promoter's inside, it's just, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you got up and told the best joke ever, right? I mean, the greatest joke ever, unequivocally, objectively, the funniest joke ever written, but it was offensive. 50% of the people were standing ovation and carrying you around on their shoulders, and 50% walked out.
Yeah, it's still
What
bad.
Would the promoter be, happy or upset?
They'd be upset, Justin.
That's what I mean. Yet they've just witnessed greatness. Well, so it is a business greatness. As well as an art. That's where stand-up comedy is different, I think. Because it's not like, you know, it's not funded by grants and gut, like, you know, like art is. And art's sort of like, it doesn't matter if you put on an exhibition, no one turns up, because it's not actually there to make money. But, like,
well,
comedy's like a bit of a grey area, isn't it?
People. I've done tour support for people where they have been put on by, like, basically the local arts council will go, oh, we're going to have this guy do this theatre that's run by volunteers at this theatre, you know, that is basically a community hub. They do no advertising. 6 people turn up and everyone's happy with that because it doesn't matter because it's not about ticket sales. It's about funding. So everyone's...
And it's about bringing art to the provinces or whatever.
Yeah, but that's nonsense, isn't it?
Well, it is to us. But you think, like, that this is why I think that there is a valid argument about, I don't think you can call stand-up comedy art because of the business side of it.
Mm. But these people, like, I was paid more than they earned from ticket sales, and I was the support act.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how that's even slightly sustainable.
Well, it's like I said, it's taxpayers' money, lottery money, whatever it is. But like I say clubs aren't clubs. But like I said, we are worms on hooks to get people to the bar, mate.
But then, so that again justifies if you get paid for a charity gig.
Sure. Absolutely. Of course. If I said to Mickey Flanagan, I'm putting on a charity gig, I'll give you $5,000, and then the on that night we raise $30,000, that's
good work.
This is the thing people don't get. It's not a fucking charity for us.
No.
That's like a charity shop. They still have to pay rates. They have to pay rent. They have to pay their managers. My ex-wife worked in charity high up, like a regional manager. And like some of the volunteers would now and then make snarky comments like, well, you know, you get paid a good salary. That's come. It's like, yeah, but she used to make over, well, she still does make over £1 million
profit. She's not dead.
a year, I know, but she makes over £1 million profit a year for a charity and takes like a sat. Of course.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work otherwise.
No, you have to pay some people.
Of course, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if you have a charity night and you get like, I don't know, Michael McIntyre to gets 10 grand, but because it's Michael McIntyre, you make 50 grand, whereas you could put in a load of people you don't pay and you could make 8 grand.
Yeah. Or you could get a load of people you've never heard of, pay them nothing, and have a really shit charity night.
And make no money.
Yeah. I've done all the spectrum there, have you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have. Yeah, I've been on ones where there's like good acts on, and it's a great, it's a success. And then I've done the one where they think, oh, it's a charity, you've got to do everything for free. Who will do it for free? They put a post on Facebook or one of the old forums on another website in the old days, and the people that you end up doing it are shit.
What about, what charities have you done? Have you done any real, like, other than we did that one for the guy with the caved in head?
Yeah, I've just done a lot of little local ones. I've done ones for...
I've done it before where I don't know what the charity is.
I did one where this... in Felixstowe, a young boy in his early 20s died of that sudden... You know what that footballer died of?
Yeah.
On the pitch. So we raised money to buy these defibrillators and... some sort of checkup thing on the. It was the dock workers union put this charity night on in a hotel, and it's was just something to do with this sort of like this young this sort of, that heart sudden heart failure that young men get out of nowhere.
Yeah,
but apparently there is a way you can screen for it, but it's quite expensive. So we raised money to get defibrillators put on the docks and also to pay for this sort of mobile unit to come in and screen them and stuff. I don't know. Do you know what they were telling me when I wasn't that interested? This was the one where I was MC. And I go, what do you do, mate? And he's like, I work on the docks. And everyone worked on the docks. And I'm not getting not a lot right at the start. So, and I'd say this bloke's name was Chris, right? Who died. He's like a 21-year-old bloke. Tragic. Just dropped down dead.
Yeah.
Right? I go, anyone here not work on the fucking docks? And this table went, yeah. So I go, okay, you, what do you do? Why are you here? They went, oh, we're Chris's family. And I went,
oh, Christ.
Right, does anyone here work on the docks? That's a fucking back out of that cul-de-sac.
Did people laugh?
Into their napkins. It was one of those ones where it was funny, but no one could admit it.
No, no. Well, they'd come along, so...
And that was like when I'd say I was started to play slightly, I guess, edging to that role of anti-comedy. Well, all of a sudden, I thought it would be the right thing to do in that split-second decisions we make as comics to sort of like pretend to be the exasperated MC where nothing's going right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I guess that is anti-comedy.
Yeah, I kind of looked at the floor, went, oh, fuck me. And, oh, okay. And sort of like hammed it up rather than smooth it over. I tried to smooth it over by making it an act of smoothing it over. Like, oh, my God, what are the chances of that?
Hmm.
So I sort of did adopt a slight role there.
Do that. When you're MC, you will take yourself into that. You're fully in control. Often I'll do that where I know what's coming, but you make it look like you don't. And everyone's surprised. Everyone laughs. And you go, oh, my God. Oh, I couldn't believe that thing happened. But you made it happen.
Yeah, well, I just thought that's the best way to deal with it. It's to sort of like everyone, it kind of like gets the impression you're in on the joke, but it is quite funny to see someone who's struggling anyway in a corporate charity style event and then goes, oh, is there really not a docker? And then the next person, it's like the worst possible person to speak to. Although they did put the hand up.
We did, we both did a charity gig for Jamie Green, didn't we? Was it Jamie Green? Is that his name?
I don't know. That's his name, but.
We did it,
was it to buy a new wheelchair?
To buy him a new wheelchair, but he'd already just got the new wheelchair. So we, I think, took the piss out of him mainly for the thing. And we know him and he's a mate. And so that was fine. But I think some of the audience were like, why are they being mean to Jamie? He's just a nice guy.
Was I definitely there?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember that.
But we just sort of, mate, he was in on the joke. Obviously, he's laughing at joke. We weren't joking about things we shouldn't be joking about. But people just thought we were being mean to Jamie.
This is the thing I've noticed about people's... it's a done-to-death topic, this offence cancel culture, taking offence. It's always on someone else's behalf. Because when I had my dickhead in the crowd that went boring, sitting with her as a friend. And I'd been speaking to this guy called Fernando, a Spanish bloke. And I go, I think I said this before, I said, you hate me as well, don't you? She went, I find it very offensive.
Yeah.
And I said, well, have I said this offensive? She went, well, it's a bit personal. And I dug her out and said, well, that's not the same thing, is it? But the only thing I can think in hindsight is I was speaking to a man from Spain. Now, I didn't mock him in any racist sort of way, but the fact he was from Spain and I was getting laughs at his expense, not for being Spanish, just, you know, that yeah. was what she thought she took umbrage to. And I've noticed that I've got this sort of like vignette in my head, which helps me to sort of understand cancel culture. It's like the most privileged people are the ones that tell you to check your privilege.
Yeah.
I've never had someone less privileged than me tell me to check my privilege. It's always someone more privileged than me. And this is why I say, you know, gallows humour is a way of dealing with the darkness. So certainly. Gallows humour, I would say literally the term comes from condemned people standing at the gallows having a joke before they're hung by the neck.
Yeah.
And gallows humour now, and the way offence is now, is me and you are stood on the gallows, we're about to be hung, and we're joking about it, and some privileged prince walks past and says, I find that offensive.
Yeah, these people are about to die.
Yeah, we're about to die. We're the ones making the jokes at our own expense, and this privileged fucker who's not tells us to be quiet because it's offending him. That's what it feels like now.
Well, that's comedy put right, isn't it?
Well, I can put it all right, mate. Give me enough time and beers. Put it all right.
And a podcast. That's why you've got to be doing the podcast every week, because otherwise...
Education.
Where are you... How are the people going to learn how comedy should be done right?
Well, That by listening to me.
Yeah, and but if you're not doing the podcast, that's what I'm saying. If you're not doing the podcast, then how are people going to be
back,
educated?
We're back, aren't we? Why are you having a go at me now? We're back.
That's what I'm saying. This is why it's good for you. It's good for the people.
Oh, yes, it is. No, you're reaffirming. I get it. But they say that comedy is tragedy plus time. Well, wisdom is Jussie plus beer. That's what I'm going to say. It's a very simple equation.
I wonder what your next big theory is going to be.
My next big theory... is going to be...
Oh, I like it when you're actually trying to think of the theory now.
I've managed to... I have thought about... I think I've had a massive breakthrough about unifying the concepts of simulation theory and infinity.
Go on then, yes please.
Well, they say that simulation theories, and they think that this is all a computer simulation.
Yes, yeah, you've spoken about this before, yeah.
And infinity is something that the human brain cannot get around, because how can things just go on and on forever?
Yeah.
And I worked it out when I was in Namco Funscape. I had a few beers playing on the retro arcades.
That's where your epiphany happened, yeah?
I was playing Pac-Man, and I was being in pursuit of the ghosts, and I dived down the tunnel on the right, and he came out of the tunnel on the left. And I thought, well, if that is not infinity and simulation theory all tied up in a bow, I don't know what is.
Can you break that down for me, please? He went off the right-hand side and reappeared.
You know,
on
there's
the...
a tunnel. You know there's a tunnel.
Yeah, I know. It goes round the back of the arcade machine.
So
I
ran down
the
tunnel off the right of the screen, and he came on the left of the screen. Now, to that Pac-Man, he would feel like he had gone into a whole new maze.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But because it's computer simulation, it just throws you back out the other side. So Pac-Man lives in an infinite number of mazes in a lineal... So I think the universe is like that, but tunnels in all directions, four-dimensional, where you're spat back around again.
Okay, and put that into a practical day-to-day life...
Well, it doesn't affect the practical day-to-day, but neither does E=mc², does it? That doesn't affect you practically.
Well, can you please break it down for me in a practical way so that I can grasp it now, physically, which tunnels am I going down in these four dimensions?
So this is more theoretical. Like, if you imagined what would the edge of the universe be and what would be on the other side of it?
Yeah, so you go to the edge of the universe, you go out, and you come back in the other side.
Pac-Man's at the edge of the universe, staring down this tunnel. He thinks, what's down there? That's the end of my... Only this two-dimensional screen exists. This is my entire environment. So he goes down the tunnel and pops out the other side. But the universe is so big, there would never be a lifetime where you could get back to the point you started at. So if he goes down, if you went through the tunnel at the end of the universe, it would spit you back out on the other side of the simulation theory, and it would be like light years and light years and light years to get back to that tunnel again. So you would never know.
I'm so pleased you don't do drugs.
I think they'd straighten me out. I think it would be like that old myth about flamingos fall over if they stand on two legs.
So you take drugs and then you just go, oh, this is all bollocks. We're not.
I'd take drugs and start training to be an accountant or something.
Oh, God. Imagine if your life had just gone slightly differently. And that's who you were. Imagine if we met and you just did a bit of stand-up, but I said, what'd you do? And you were like, oh, I'm an accountant.
I'm not good with numbers.
No, that's true. Nor am I.
Want money.
But we've met, we've crossed paths with people who are chemists and people who are car dealers and people who are, what else? What other jobs have you known that colleagues of ours have had? Managers of building supply merchants? Anyone had any good ones? Anyone, have you ever met anyone that had a day job and then a night job as a comic?
Oh, don't... yeah, a repo man.
Oh, yes.
That's a pretty cool one.
I think that's a scary one.
Oh, it is scary, but I'm just saying, obviously, like, it's obviously that's a bit rock and roll in the era of can't pay, take it away.
Yeah, does that still happen? It must do.
What?
People coming and collecting your goods.
Do you not watch Can't Pay, Take It Away?
No, I thought you were singing a song.
No, it's a whole reality show about bailiffs just going around to really downtrodden. If you want to feel better about yourself, that is the ultimate, what would you call it, status porn, where you feel better, like someone's having their fucking Mondeo taken away because they've fallen behind on the payment.
A £600 Mondeo.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
And it's so funny. It's always like that. These people are just some people. The neck on some people. They just don't pay their rent.
Yeah.
Just... I mean, it's just why? Why would you pay rent? Because it looks to me like you don't pay your rent for a year. Finally, they send someone round. They go right. Get all your stuff together and get out. I mean, I've got one bag. I've got a bag. I've got a set of golf clubs. A
but
laptop,
you're in the house now. Can you fill up with your stuff whilst you're in the family home?
I haven't got anything. I don't own anything.
Yeah.
And they just throw you out.
Build
and then...
up for this moment to happen for your entire life.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ahead of the curve.
But the only thing you've got is that huge bag of golf balls.
Yeah, I've got a lot of golf balls, but they're shit. I'm going to get rid of them. They're
yeah,
just
you're
going
to have to get rid of them if you're not living in the house.
I've
otherwise...
got to say this about... Yeah, let's go on.
Otherwise, you're just leaving golf balls.
Well, I don't like to be a snob about a lot of things, but I'm such a snob when it comes to golf balls.
Why have you got 300 golf balls then?
I've got so many golf balls that I wouldn't even think... If I wrap, right, really expensive premium golf balls, like your Titleist Pro V1, your Callaway Chrome Soft, your... I'm going to list them all now. Do that boring anti-comedy thing. Your TaylorMade TP5s and the new one on the scene, I would say, is your... What are those new ones? The ones you're
Nike
about?
Golf balls.
Nike don't make equipment anymore. They only make apparel.
What?
Yeah, they stopped manufacturing equipment.
Why?
I just don't think they were making enough money. And this is when I had that big argument at a pub quiz I was doing. And it said, who is Rory McIlroy sponsored by? And he'd just gone to TaylorMade. It was the biggest golf deal ever. He got £10 million a year for 10 years to use their clubs. It was a £100 million sponsorship deal. About a month before the... And the pub quiz was this... sudden death round, and if you got one question wrong, you didn't get any points for that round. But if you got them all right, you got double points for the whole round. So yes. It was like you had to sort of like, and I got them all. And she was like, Nike. I went, no, they don't even make clubs anymore. She went, well, it says Nike here. And I was like, but they don't make clubs anymore. And it was like, well, I lost.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was furious. But
did you do? Hang on. What were you doing?
This was about a year and a half ago.
What are you doing at quiz night?
Doing a pub quiz trying to win some money.
What?
I'm actually not bad at general knowledge, believe
me. No,
it or
I think not. You're very good at general knowledge. I just don't know if you're down as the quizzer type.
No, I was walking past with my wife and we said, should we go in and have a few drinks and do a pub quiz? And we did, and we would have won as well.
I'd have said, well, just Google it. You're wrong.
Yeah, she went, no, I've got to go by what it says on the sheet. I said, anyway, as I was saying...
You don't have to go by what it says on the sheet, because the sheet's wrong.
I think she had her mates in there and she gave them the money.
I'm so angry.
Yeah, and so a premium set of a dozen balls will be like 40 quid for like Titleist Pro V1s, right? And I've probably got about 150 more golf balls in my garage in big bags. And if I run out of Pro V1s, I would go and buy a dozen more for 40 quid rather than delve into that.
So why are you hanging on to... You're like a hoarder of golf balls.
Yeah, no reason. But I am such a snob with golf balls. I'm not even good at golf, but I cannot use... I would never use...
This would be good for you. Like, when you're in this stressful time, why don't you take those golf balls, go to the seaside and just drive them into the sea?
It's not a bad shout, actually. I might do that. Should we do it together at Southend?
Off the pier? I don't think they'd let you do it. But we could do it off the beach.
We'll go down to that bit where the bottle tops are all stuck in the tarmac near the train station.
Would the golf balls biodegrade?
Could not give a fuck, mate. How about that? That is not going to stop me.
What happens if you take your own golf balls to a driving range?
Oh, you're not. Well, you just lose all your golf balls, and they
say
not to.
Yeah, but you need to lose these golf balls.
People do. Like when you hit range balls, they're not proper balls. They don't go quite as far. They're lighter. They don't spin as much. But like now and then, you'll see. Oh, you'll find a proper ball, and I'll look at it and I'll go, "What is it? Oh, it's a Dunlop. I don't want that shit." But if it was a Titleist or a TaylorMade or a Callaway, I might put it in my bag, which is illegal. But fuck it, I'm a bit of a rebel. Yeah, well, you have sort of. You haven't actually.
No.
That's like if you paid to play snooker and put a couple of the balls in your pocket. You haven't really paid for them, have you?
What are you like at snooker?
Terrible at that. Never. Like they all say that's a sign of a misspent youth, but I obviously misspent mine in other ways because. Mm. I definitely misspent my youth, but not playing fucking pool or snooker.
I'm not very good.
I think it's a bit of a nerdy sort of dweeb game.
Oh, because you don't like the maths.
It's angles, it's maths. It's like you got to be quiet when you're in there.
You can only remember what colour to put the balls in because that song.
Snooker loopy?
Yeah.
The trouble with snooker is the table's too big. The balls are too far away on occasion. I'm just like, this is like fucking hard work.
There used to be a snooker hall near where I live, and I went once with my mate and I was like, we should do this more often. This is just like you go and have a couple of beers and you play some snooker, maybe the football's on, and we just never did it again. And then it closed down because no one ever did it.
Well, I think that the man walking down the street with some sort of cue under his arm and a little leather case is to be given a wide berth.
Anyone who takes... See, I'm not that comfortable with you taking your own clubs to a golf course.
Well, you have to, Ash.
I know. It's like me turning up to a football match with my own ball.
You're not allowed to share clubs on a golf course. You've got to take your own clubs.
You're not allowed to share clubs on a golf course.
No, we couldn't turn up with one set of clubs. They wouldn't let us on. We'd have to sort of like borrow a bag and put half my clubs in yours and half in mine and try and... Because it slows play down. Wow. If you hit it over to the left and I hit it over to the right, we've got to both go to each ball. And then like you get a backlog and you get a jam on the course, mate. I haven't played golf for months. I'm actually thinking about selling my clubs. I think I've retired.
Oh.
Yeah, and they're going on eBay. Like along with I sold all my weights equipment. I'm selling all my albums. I think the golf clubs have got to go as well.
For financial reasons or just because
It's not just the money for getting the clubs. It's like I can't really afford to go to golf. I've joined a gym now, haven't I? That's 40 quid a month. But I go every day and steam and
sniffed then.
Oh, I've got a cold.
Yeah, but it was just like you said, I joined a gym, that's 40 quid a month.
Yeah, like a Charlie Chuggington.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
you go every day. Well, anyway, what do you steal from the gym? You said, and I steal.
What, you steal anything?
Oh, it sounded like you said steam.
Steam. Like they've got a sauna and a steam room.
Oh, yeah.
So even if I'm too tired, hungover to work out, I'll still go and have a sauna and steam and have a shower there. So I'm not...
Have a shower. Because actually... like, your car's clean, but you don't know what you're getting off the old mats, do you?
Well, the thing is, even if I lived in a fixed abode, if you pay £40 a month and never showered at home, yeah, that's got to be a lot of money over the year
you're cooping. Do your shit there, can't you? Go there.
Go have a good clear out. There was an incident there the other day, actually. I had to get out of the sauna for the incident.
What kind of incident? Someone had had an incident or you?
No, there was an incident.
What? That had taken place or was about to?
No, that took place in
the
toilet.
Oh, no, Justin.
No, I had an incident.
Go on.
I had to go to the poo-poo. I call that an incident.
But it hadn't happened. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, no, I was sat in the sauna, and I'm 10 minutes into my 25-minute standard sauna that I like to do. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be an incident. I've got to get out of here. So I went. I had to...
All hot and sweaty.
Yeah, slid, slipped off the toilet seat, well, mate.
That's the thing, because as soon as... This is... When you're on holiday, you know when you go for a shit and you're on holiday... Or,
do you have to be so vulgar?
And you take your swimming shorts down, you sort of peel them off you because they're a bit damp, and then you're basically sitting naked on the toilet all wet.
Yeah. Mate, I had to walk into a public toilet barefoot in a pair of Speedo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, I was definitely walking through piss. And even out, bringing it all full circle, you said, what about flip-flops? And I started to say, not even at the gym, I'm not getting flip-flops, I'm not getting slides. I would rather slip about another bloke's urine with my bare feet than look like a Russian in fucking slides. I'm a gentleman.
I might get you some Lonsdale sliders.
Yeah, you can go, they'll go straight in the bin along with the Crocs, mate. That's the thing. That is the environment where you say, oh, do you know what? I wish I had a pair of Crocs. I don't.
No.
Even if I trod in a turd, I'd still rather. I just wash it off.
Well, there we go. That's why you're a better man than me.
Well, one of the reasons.
One of the few reasons. What else you got for me?
What else have I got for you?
So I joined a new Facebook group this mm-hmm. week. On
what
your
mensch put you onto that then?
On your say so. There's a secret little group for professional comedians that I'd never been told about. So just as that,
just think about what you've said, look at the evidence, and why might that be?
I'm not on Facebook.
Yeah, that's it.
Not on Facebook very much. So I go on this little group, say, Jussie P Dog Pedo has recommended me to the group. Can I come in, please? And they say, well, you've got to prove that you are a professional comedian by sending us invoices to gigs for the top clubs, at least three invoices to the top clubs in the UK, and then you'll be considered for entry. And it's like joining the Masons or something.
Well, it keeps, the thing is that you can then put, you can put an advert on there, like, or if you reply to a call for a gig, they sort of already think, oh, he's, I've only posted it on there, this guy must, it's just a bit of a standard, I guess.
Yeah. I know, it paid dividends straight away. I've already been booked. I'm never looking back. I'm in the club. No. I'm in the team.
You're in the team, coach. So I recommended someone for a gig that I couldn't do.
How bad?
And they had walkouts.
Oh, yes, please.
And the promoter was like, that guy you sent me isn't very good.
Oh, yes.
And I said, oh, really? I sort of did know that, but yeah, I had to pretend I didn't. But yeah. I said, to be fair, I booked them to MC, and then on the night it got rescheduled and they had to open.
What?
And I said, to be fair, I would never have put him forward to open.
Yeah.
But he could do a job as MC. And he went, all right, well, fair enough. That's fair enough.
Will he hold it against you and never book you again?
Yeah, I don't think he was happy, but I did manage to get out of it by saying, you asked me to recommend an MC, which I did. He didn't MC, kind of six and one, half a dozen the other. I'm not taking the full rap.
But you're still going to get... But you've got lots of bookings for these people anyway, haven't you?
Maybe, maybe not.
So you'll be fine, wouldn't you?
Probably.
It's a danger, isn't it? Because I often gig at people, oh, you know so-and-so. Could you recommend me to them? And I think, no, I can't.
I've started saying I don't think you're ready for that, mate.
Oh, I'd never say that, but... It's a big ask to say to someone, can you contact that person that trusts you and books you, because I want to do it. And
well, basically you say to me every time I tell you I do a gig.
Yes, I do that to you, yeah. But I know, and you never do. So Ash, it's almost like, oh.
Well, you're not ready, mate.
Oh, come on.
That was lovely. Come on. Oh. That was fun. That was good fun.
I feel like you mean
we had fun with that one, didn't we?
It hurts, though.
Stings a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like a drill into a anesthetized, I don't know how to say the fucking word, tooth. Anesthetized?
Yeah, whatever, it don't matter, does it? It's only me and you.
Well, I can't say it, the word, because my mouth's all numb and sore.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Right, well, that's it. That's another week's podcast.
You sound a bit subdued today. Is everything okay, hon?
Yes, I'm good. I'll tell you what, I've been looking after the baby today.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I have been mainly looking after the baby, and that means I am exhausted.
Yeah, been there, done that twice.
We're doing this early afternoon, I would say.
Yeah.
I really had the decision to make, do I record a podcast with Panks or do I go to sleep when she goes to sleep for a nap? And I recorded the podcast with you.
What's that sleepy thing you've done about the other day, ASDF or something?
What?
You know that sleepy thing that people do on YouTube, is it ASDF?
Sleepy thing?
You always mention it where they'll make like really deliberately boring videos and noises to put you in, to relax you.
ASMR.
ASMR. That's it. How did you not know what I was talking about? You was acting then. Like I was
I don't know. I don't think it's got anything to do with sleep. I wondered what you were talking about.
ASMR stands for something like audio sensory. It stands for something to do with relaxing. So if you're an insomniac, you're meant to watch them videos and you get asleep.
Truth is, I didn't know that.
I think that's what it is.
I'm looking it up.
It's like people whispering and I've seen videos on YouTube where it said, oh, unintentional ASMR, and it'll be like some boring bloke talking about something, but he thinks he's making an interesting video talking about keys or something.
I'm trying to Google.
I think ASMR, look up what that stands for. It stands up for something like audio, auditory, it's a really complicated thing. But I was thinking
autonomous sensory meridian response.
Yeah, so it causes your body to make this sort of sleepy response. It relaxes you.
So auditory, it's crashed. It is.
Don't worry about it.
Autonomous sensory meridian response, which sometimes is a tingling sensation that typically begins in the scalp and moves down the back of the neck, upper spine, a pleasant form of paresthesia.
I got it. I was wrong then. That's fingernails down a blackboard.
But this, I thought it was like a nice thing.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, no, look. Soft ASMR sound and triggers sleep and relaxation.
We're both right. See, I'll concede some.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I've had another observation this week. I don't know if I've told you it before.
Go on.
The Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Makes me angry.
Yeah.
Because?
None of the songs they sing are blues.
Yeah, it's Soul.
Yeah.
They should be called the Soul Brothers.
What a film.
Darker than you remember. I tried to watch it with my kids and I was like, ooh, Nazis. Nuns.
I think it might be one of the most perfect films ever made.
That era of SNL was amazing because, like, you think all that, you think of the films that came out of that sort of year group. It was like Trading Place, Eddie Murphy. So you had Trading Places with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. They was SNL together, weren't they? So you had Chevy Chase, Blues Brothers, Animal House. And now look, total fucking dog shit.
Well, now, I don't know who's even on it now. But it used
exactly.
I like The Lonely Island. They came out of SNL.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's a bit niche for a comedy. These were like blockbuster Ghostbusters. These are like blockbuster films that defined a decade. And now you got Lonely Island are quite good. 12% of the audience listening have heard of them.
So,
do you know what I mean?
Okay, so what happened there then?
Political correctness. And with that, I bid you a good morrow, fair sir.
Just got onto a great thing, and we're wrapping up. But that is how it goes, listener. We don't put any kind of...
always leave them wanting more.
Always leave them waiting for more. They do want more, but they don't know
why. They're getting more. They can shut the fuck up now.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, listener, for that, and shut the fuck up. And we're going to do more, and the Patreon, we'll start doing some Patreon stuff soon, and then you'll be sorry.
Yeah, we want you to patronise us.
Yes, we do. Thanks, Justin. I'll speak to you soon.